good. It feels so natural.
What's something you've written and you've just gone, I can't know?
You can look at it and kind of try and learn from the things you've been through.
You write songs, right?
I've read that a few times too.
I know, we've sold that many records. This week, I caught up with Robert Forster. After a 7-year hiatus, he's back with a brand new album that, despite most of the songs being written a few years back, sounds as current as ever. It could be the reference to Twitter. We catch up with the funny ladies from Skitbox, who've just premiered their new comedy series, Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am. And Chris Bayo from Vampire Weekend talks about his new solo project, as well as being related to Charles in Charge.
Miff's Best Bits on Double J.
It has been quite a long time between albums, but I must admit the new album, Songs to Play, was worth the wait. And whilst you wrote most of the record a while ago, the themes are still very relevant and represent a new chapter in his life after the passing of former Go-Betweens bandmate Grant McLennan. And firstly, Robert and I spoke about who he chose to collaborate with on this record.
One of the things is that they're all younger than me. It just depends how far you want to go back. There's some that are only, you know, like 10 years younger than me, and there's some that are like 30. But the main two, I guess, and the ones that the listeners would know would be Scott Bromley and Luke McDonald from the John Steel Singers.
Of course.
And I produced their album, their first album, Tangalooma, in 2010. And I was just amazed by them. You know, like they're both multi-instrumentalists, you know, and they're also very much not lost in their abilities. They're very song-orientated. And I just thought they'd be perfect for my material. And so I invited them over to my house back in about 2011 and just said, look, I've written these songs. I'd like to make an album with you guys and just bring everything that you've got and just put it into my songs and we'll talk, you know, and we'll work it through. And like they were just incredible. And so, you know, they're singing, you know, we'd be in the lounge room and it'd be like, you know, guitars, keyboards, glockenspiel, you know, trumpet. It'd all be just nylon string guitar. It'd all be lying around there. We'd be trying songs and they'd just be jumping from instrument to instrument, just trying out ideas. And so they were incredible. On violin and vocals is my wife, Karen Boimler. We've been playing music for almost 25 years, sort of at home and,
yep.
and sort of played a little bit in Germany together. She's done sort of various things and we've almost come to working together in public a number of times, but, you know, children came along and then the Go-Betweens reformed and suddenly in around 2008, I started to write the songs and she came in, but she got the violin off the wall and we just went away. Oh, so that's another ingredient.
That's fantastic.
And then Matt is the drummer from the band that I toured on the last album with, The Evangelists. So it's just people here, people there, people I know. We're all in Brisbane and we're all in my lounge room, you know, with my wife and I, and we're just playing, you know.
It sounds like a really good experience. Is there a moment on the album where you've got something in there that you would never have thought of doing that someone else brought to that song? Do you want to tell me about that moment, a moment, one of them?
Yeah. It was there's a very particular moment that it was a highlight of the album for me, actually. There's a song called A Poet Walks, and we're up at the studio. There's a lot of instruments around, just weird instruments all the way through the house, guitars and stuff like this, and a, you know, kooky old keyboards and stuff. We were working on the song A Poet Walks and Luke said to me, I hear an instrument at this particular part doing something and taking out the whole of the end section, you know, like I can hear something. And I said to him, well, look, just go and find the instrument and bring it back to me, you know, go through everything and just bring it back to me. And he walked off. And then he walked back in 5 minutes later with a sitar.
Oh, wow.
And it had been in this room where I'd been overdubbing. It was like a sitar that was just sort of almost decoration. And I went, okay, all right, we're going to go, you know, down the sitar route. And so he just sort of, he'd never played sitar in his life. And he just sort of tuned it up to a guitar. And he just started to play this sort of, you know, this is the genius of these guys. He just started to play these sort of little chord things, these little note runs, and it just worked perfectly for the song. And, you know, I would have never, ever gone to sitar. I would have never, ever assumed that I could tune it or play it. And he just did it. And it was like, and at that moment, I just thought, wow, like, this is the spirit of the recordings. You know, like, this is where it is. And it was a lovely moment.
I want to talk to you about Let Me Imagine You, which is a song that we're playing a lot on Double J.
And I've heard, and thank you, I've heard this.
Oh, we
and
love
I've
it.
Heard it on the radio too.
Oh, good, good. Mm. You got a reference to Twitter in there. Now, I think you might be the only songwriter who could do so without making it sound clunky.
I'll tell you what. I wrote that back in 2009 and I was so scared that Twitter was going to go out of fashion. And the years were going by and I was thinking, God, this Twitter thing is just going to go. It's going to virtually, you know, like MySpace or something, you know, just sort of completely fall off the thing. And then I'd record it and everyone would go, oh, my God, Forster's like just 7 years out of date. You know, here he is sort of going on about Twitter and it's completely disappeared. So I'm sort of glad that it hung around. I'm lucky.
You
I'm
are. Lucky you yeah. are. It sounds yeah. great, but I'm also wondering about the sentiment behind that song. I get a feeling that there's some sadness about us not using our imaginations as much anymore. We're telling everyone everything and we're not really, really telling ourselves anything interesting.
Yeah, it's about, you know, dreaming and guessing you know, just let me imagine it. You don't have to send me 100 photos. You don't have to. And it's not an anti-technology rave. I'm not interested in that at all. It's just sort of let me dream about it. Let me. You're going to Greece. Don't send me 10,000 photos. I can imagine you on Mykonos. You know, like. Yeah. I can pick that up, you know. Big line is, you know, just let me dream and guess. I know you well and I can sort of imagine you there. It's about imagination, how that is perhaps getting lost because we have so many pictures and we have so much information that sometimes not having all the information and all the pictures makes you think about what's going on, which could be a really good thing. Let me get my calculator and add up the cost of all those things. Oh my. Please don't Twitter. Let me imagine. I find it sweeter. Let me imagine you. Let me imagine you. Let me imagine you. Let me imagine you.
Do you like your live music up close and intimate? Then don't miss out on Double J's Musical Chairs. Upon the floor, some torn-up T-shirts lay. We invite some of the best musicians from Australia and overseas to perform exclusively for Double J in unique locations. If I sit here and just close my eyes, then... Musical Chairs. Check out all the videos now at doublej.net.au or find Double J on YouTube.
Miff with you here on Double J, and there's something excellent up on ABC iView as of today. It's called Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am. It's a half-hour sketch comedy pilot from Skitbox, and it's all been made as part of the Fresh Blood pilot season. And it's a sketch comedy series from a twisted female perspective, which I absolutely loved. I urge you to all go and have a look. It's created and written, directed by and starring Skitbox, and I have a couple of members of Skitbox here today. We've got Adele Vuko and Greta Lee Jackson. Welcome to the Double J Studios.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Launch day today. How are you celebrating?
Oh, celebrating.
How do you do a launch on iView? Like, do you crack a bottle of champagne over your iPad or?
Yeah. If we want to break the iPad, yeah.
A Skype, you know, a couple of drinks over Skype.
We've been grouped very, very supportive tweets to one another with the other pilots as well, which
excellent.
Has been nice.
With little emoticons of champagne glasses and things like that. Yeah.
And I want to play a clip from Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am, which made me laugh a lot. And this is set in a police station. Do you want to tell us about this one?
Yeah, so this one is this is one of the sketches that was based from our original series, It's a Woman's World. So it's a police station that's set in a world where women are the dominant sex, so all the police officers are women, and they're welcoming the very first male police officer.
Okay, let's have a listen. And there might be a little bit more in the trailer as well as to what you might hear on the TV show. Let's have a listen.
I'd like to introduce you to our newest recruit, and Australia's first male police officer, Officer Michaels.
I'm not going to learn guy speak.
Yeah,
I'm not learning guy speak.
Wait, what's guy speak?
Oh, I'm 40.
Subwoofer.
No pause. I'm going to pause. But is it really what I'm
So good, so good. Some bits of the trailer. Let's talk about the situation in the police station. It's Matt O'Kine from Triple J Breakfast is in there, and he's doing quite a bit in it as well. And he plays the poor man who's the first gentleman in all female police.
Yeah, he did a very good job.
He certainly did. Yeah. What made you think about doing something like that?
What is it? It's working in places that are predominantly male, and maybe some of the ways you get treated a bit differently. That what would that happen if it was the other way around, you know, if it was a guy coming into this world for the first time rather than a girl. And wasn't it?
Yeah, we kind of like hype it up a little bit, obviously, but
yeah,
there is an element
I
of that kind
footy.
Of
yeah. Yeah, I know. Like whatever the ridiculous sexist stereotype is for, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the
with
gender.
a bit of fun, but you know, it's all kind of treated quite lightly, and but you know, it does highlight those kind of there can be an element of feeling a little bit like the odd one out in a workplace if you are a woman in some workplaces still. You know, there's an element of being patronised a little bit and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So we just thought, you know, why not play with it the other way around?
And it's freaking hilarious. I have to
say. Yeah, Matt does a very good job. He's very like, oh, shucks, yeah, like trying to impress, trying to be friends, and then he just gets exasperated by
yeah,
the end.
Yeah, it's great. And there's also a sitcom in there that's kind of a junky version of Friends, mm-hmm, which you heard.
Yeah.
Which is it is actually quite genius. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's another one that we kind of subverted the usual stereotypical sitcom. We thought that sitcoms, you know, they're still around and they're great. They serve a really great purpose. The laugh track for us is just something so interesting to explore. We thought we'd put it over some really serious content, like people with drug addiction. So we called it Junkies. So it's basically if you're a fan of Friends, it's kind of like the friends moved out of their, you know, their apartment, and six junkies moved in and turned it into a crack den.
Myth's Best Bits on Double J.
Chris has released a brand new album. It's called The Names. It is out now, and it's his second release as a solo artist. And I caught up with him recently when he was in the country and talked about that surname, the one that I seem to be getting confused over, and the distinct connection with Scott Baio, and the rather long process that led him to branching out into a different musical realm.
I would say around 2009, sort of after touring the first Vampire Weekend record, and like while we were starting to work on Contra, our second record, I found I was having ideas and didn't know how to translate them, like how to make a synth sound. I knew nothing about. I always, as a teenager, would play guitar, write a song, and recording it, it would be like, okay, we're going to be someplace for $30 an hour for 2 days and try and record 16 songs really quickly. So I never like approached music as a producer. I would approach it as a songwriter, yeah, or an arranger, or like a bass player. And sort of realizing that the real like power and in terms of shaping a recording that comes from production, and knowing nothing about it, I would say I was a successful bass player and a frustrated producer 6 years ago.
Yeah,
this is a very exciting time to be making music. You can buy a program that's $200 and it literally has everything you need to make like a good vibey album, and that for me, it's like an incredible time and exciting to make music. So I did what anyone else does. I got one of those programs and really spent as much of my free time, like not on tour, not working with the band, sort of learning how to be a producer. And that was like definitely a journey. I would say it took me about 3 years to get to a place where I was comfortable making tracks, making electronic music, making stuff that I could play when I DJ'd out and like didn't make my skin crawl because it didn't sound bad. Like that, I enjoyed it.
The album is fantastic. It's big, dancey sounds and great electronic sounds. I was just interested in what you were trying to create with that. Was it going back to things that you enjoyed playing when you were DJing, doing the radio stuff back at uni?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a lot of love for compact records. And even sort of as of 6 years ago, I've been doing a lot more club DJing. And I think that sort of started around the same time I was getting into production. And it's very natural. I think it's the history of the DJ a lot of the time is playing a DJ set and imagining a track that could fit between one track and another track that you love that doesn't exist. I think that that's a great like way of thinking about music and an exercise is like, how would I connect these two songs that I love in my own song? And that's something I really think about a lot of the time when I'm making electronic music. It's a huge, huge influence. And for me, like I just DJed for the first time in maybe like a year, really, last weekend, and getting to mix like a four-tet track that I love and could listen to for the rest of my life into a track on my record, and to have it not completely kill the vibe in the room, to not have people walk away in disgust, but to have people enjoy my track next to a track of a producer I love is a very wonderful feeling.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to ask, Bayo.
Mm-hmm.
Your surname. You are related to Scott Bayo?
I am. I've never met him, but he is my grandfather's brother's son. So first cousin once removed.
Once removed.
So yeah. I've never met him, but I guess it's my record's called The Names, and for my entire life, from when I was 5 years old, people would be like, oh, are you related to Scott Bayo? I'd be like, yeah, I am. And that's kind of like part of the first impression that people get. Your name is, in a way, one of the very first impressions in all your social interactions that you have. So that, like, is something that maybe colored most of the, like, personal interactions early on for my whole life, and I've never met him. So it's kind of, like, funny the way those things work.
It's like he's with you, but never around. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, goodness me. Speaking of the title of the album, The Names, obviously Don DeLillo, the author, wonderful writer. You grew up in the same town.
So I didn't grow up in the same town, but the town I grew up in is where he lived, and he recently moved out of the town. Now, I feel good about this because I'm doing all these interviews where I talk about the square mile town where he lived. And it would be kind of weird if he were still living there to be like, yo, this guy lives in Bronxville, New York. I don't think that that's something that he was would be interested in, just knowing him and having, you know, read interviews with him and seen him talk. So I'm quite happy that he moved away recently. Yeah. But yeah, so I grew up in this kind of square mile suburban town a bit north of New York City. And you know, you only know what you've experienced, but I, you know, felt it to be kind of like, you know, a boring, traditional, like the cliches of a boring suburban American upbringing. I felt that that was sort of the character of the town I grew up in, and I couldn't wait to move to a city. I knew that that was, for me, I very lucky to have gone to college in New York City. But when I was in my mid-20s, I guess probably about 6 years ago, I found out that that was where, you know, Don DeLillo was living and had written, basically...
One of the greatest American living writers living in your town
exactly.
that you thought was boring.
Exactly. And I had no idea. That's exactly the way to put it. And I was very struck by that. And I would have read maybe two of his books at that point. But I really just sort of threw myself into reading everything he had ever written. So I read all his novels in a very condensed period of time.
Are you going to send him a copy of the album, or have you sent him a copy?
I have not. I would like that. That is actually a very nice idea. I think that I will try and do that. Like I said, I've read so many interviews with him, and he likes jazz, so I don't know what he'll think, but yeah.
catch up with Miff Warhurst for lunch. Weekdays from 11 on Double J.